everybody. My name is Marilyn, and today I am with three members of the Climate Alliance of the South Sound. I'm here with Gemini Noel.
Hi, everybody.
And Ethan Pasquale.
Hello.
And Isaac Penoyer.
Penoyer, yeah.
Penoyer, okay. And they are members of the Climate Alliance. I'm going to use the initials for that instead of Climate Alliance for the South Sound. It's CASS, CASS.
Yep, CASS.
I want to ask, first of all, if you can explain what CASS is. Gemini?
Yeah, I can take that. So Climate Alliance of the South Sound is a grassroots local organization that fights to empower, organize, and mobilize our communities to improve their living conditions through environmental action. So that's a lot of words to say we're an environmental organization, but we're a little different from other environmental organizations. We are not a nonprofit. We're totally grassroots. And we put a focus on, like, working people and the communities that we serve. So, you know, we see stuff like gas taxes or stuff that disproportionately impacts the poor and struggling people as not good solutions to fight climate change. We see, mm-hmm. you know, corporations and businesses and the super wealthy as being the drivers of climate change. And, you know, we want to hold those people accountable.
Okay. Anything else you want to add about it?
It's super awesome.
we have free food every Mondays.
Yeah, we meet every Monday at 5:30 at 311 Puyallup Ave in Tacoma for a free community meal and then a planning meeting that starts at 6. So if you want to get involved, you should come on down.
I was very impressed when I went down last week. Now, how in the world did CASS start? Maybe, Isaac, you could take that one.
Oh, I was not there for the founding. It's literally both of them.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah. So CASS started in, I believe, April of last year. So, our very first meeting was in June. So we count June as being like our birthday. And so we celebrated our birthday recently. And in the last year, just so much has happened. We started out with just five people, and we've grown to over 20 people as part of CASS now. And so, we've done that mostly through just being active in the community, doing canvassing, going to city council meetings, and just being really active in especially South Tacoma.
So it's a pretty new organization. You must have had 15 people around the table last week.
Yeah. I'm just so proud and inspired by all the work that people have put into CASS and how many people believe in our message and our campaign and want to work together to especially fight against the South Tacoma Mega Warehouse, which is our current campaign.
Well, you just answered one of my future questions. That's okay. We can get into that a little bit more. So that's when it started. How did the brainstorm to start it? It's something out of nothing. How did it get? I mean, tell me about the starting.
Yeah, I can talk about that a little bit. So most of us who around the table, there were five founding members. Most of us had experience in organizing, especially climate organizing. You know, when I went to community college, I was the head of our environmental club there. That's actually how me and Aoife became good friends, I think.
Yeah, at TCC.
At TCC, yeah, shout out to TCC. And what we found was, you know, we had been like out in the streets during the George Floyd uprisings. We had been, many of us went to like the March for Science and the Women's March years before. And we were feeling like, you know, there wasn't like a path forward for us as environmental organizers that really fit with our niche. We wanted to do something. We wanted to get back out in the streets, you know. Mm-hmm. We had all this energy to want to see change, to want to affect the future that we want for ourselves and our children. But we didn't see that path forward. And so we decided to forge our own.
Well, Well, I'm so glad you did. Can you each tell me a little bit about yourselves, how you came to this point? I'm going to start with you, Isaac.
You gave me a loop there. I noticed that. I actually met Gemini. Yeah, I actually met Gemini at last year's Tacoma Earthgate event. We were pulling out so many weeds and sticker bushes and then putting in mulch at the same time as having this conversation of like, oh, you're cool. Oh, and you're cool. Do you want to like hang out and do more cool stuff together? Yeah. And from there, I started going to cast meetings as regularly as I could. Considering I'm also a part of SENCO, which is the South End Neighborhood Council, I do my best to do as much as I can because I want to not only, you know, have, unfortunately, a full-time job and going to college and doing community service, I want to, like, actually make a difference in the environment for the positive impact that it'll bring to the community as well as to the earth itself. There's no us without earth, and to live without it is literally a nightmare.
Yeah. Okay. And Aoife, tell me a little bit more about yourself.
Let's see. I've always loved plants and animals ever since I was a kid, and as soon as I started going to college, I went to school first at Tacoma Community College, and that's where, you know, I started sort of getting into environmental activism. I took my first botany class there, and that really, like, started stirring inside me, like, this really deep love for the natural world, and you know, I think all of us alive today in today's climate can see that there's a lot of suffering in the natural world, you know? And I wanted to, you know, for a long time do something that felt effective and tangible and had like real benefits to both human and non-human life on this planet. And it took me a long time to find an avenue for that that felt right. And then after TCC, I went to Evergreen, and I really value the experiences and the things I learned there, but I still felt like academia was not like the correct avenue for me to impact the kind of change or impart the kind of change I wanted to be doing. And that's when, you know, over like the like George Floyd uprising and then the pandemic, we sort of started doing like kind of a study group thing. And like overwhelmingly, you know, we found that, you know, doing activism in the community, it makes real change. And like empowering people in like locally to you can have like real power within the city and uniting with each other, it just felt really, you know, good deep in my heart. And I can see like real change in the community because of the work that collectively all of us are doing together. And yeah, I guess that's a little bit about me and how I came to be here
beautifully
today.
Beautifully said. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Gemini, I know you've been at this a while, so why don't you tell us about how you got involved?
So again, as a kid, I had a great interest in the outdoors. I'm a tribally enrolled member with the Osage Nation, and I grew up spending a lot of time with my grandma, who is Osage or was Osage. She's passed now. You know, they left, the Osage Reservation is in Oklahoma, and my ancestors left that a while ago, and they've been living out in the Pacific Northwest since then. So, you know, I feel very deeply connected to the land and water here. Like, I grew up, you know, picking salmon berries and the red huckleberries and playing in the, you know, call it Jump Off Joe Creek. That's the name of the river that we used to play in. And I wanted to, like Aoife said, I wanted to fight to protect this. You know, I saw the destruction that's going on, and and I wanted to fight for a better world. So I went to college. That's what they told us to do, right? I went with the Osage scholarship. You know, me and all my siblings did. And in college, I studied semiconducting nanomaterials for application in renewable energy. I'm a published research scientist. I worked in the Gamlin lab. And the most important thing I learned in that lab was that we have the stuff that we need to fight climate change. We have solar cells. We have the information and stuff that we need to make real meaningful change, and we are not doing it. We are not doing it because it's not profitable. We are doing the research and the planning and all the stuff that makes money. That, you know, the publish or perish mindset. And what I found is that, again, and this is not to dig the people who I worked with. They were incredible. I have immense respect for scientists and researchers, everybody in the lab. But, you know, I have immense respect for them. And something that I noticed is that they did not have immense respect for the people who were doing even more work for them, which were the cleaning crew. And the people who took out the hazardous material that they played with, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I see these people, like my PI made like $300,000 a year, right? And the people who did the most work were the people who were taken out as garbage. And that was really, really radicalizing for me. So I did not go to grad school. And that was part because the pandemic hit. But after doing, again, like research and looking into like other programs that were really effective, you know, I take a lot of inspiration from the original Black Panther Party and, you know, like the WIC program and stuff that came out of that. And I see like the changes and impact that you can make by organizing locally being tremendous. And so that's where I decided to put my energy.
That's really interesting. I didn't know some of your history. I met Gemini. Oh my goodness, it's been at least a year ago, and I was so impressed with her positive energy, and it's really hard to tell Gemini no, so she's a born organizer, so very effective, and the Raging Grannies have been tapped several times to sing at events. Now, I think it's only fair to share a little bit about myself. I was raised on the East Coast, just outside of Washington, D.C., and I guess I'm a lifelong malcontent. I grew up of age in the 60s, and that meant that I was, you know, marching in the counter-inaugural march on Nixon and fighting very hard to bring our troops home from Vietnam, and definitely later on a flower child. I went to school in North Carolina. One of the things that made me really sad growing up is that our skies were very seldom blue because of the pollution. In the summertime, the skies were gray, and that's just the way it was. And it was smog. And the Potomac River was polluted. And so as soon as I could, I left Washington, D.C. area and came out to Washington State, which I thought was absolute heaven. And kind of by way of Berkeley, you know. So I was part of the People's Park struggle against the regents of UC Berkeley when they wanted to pave over the People's Park. And I certainly demonstrated against SATSOP, the nuclear plant that they wanted to put in, and picketed the smelter for the first Earth Day. And I go back a ways, and you know, I have other issues that I get involved in too. But as an aging activist, no longer able to do the long marches and things like that, it is so wonderful to see younger, more fit people who were able to come to things with that kind of energy, because that's really attractive and it really gathers steam. And unlike, I'm going to say it, the Sunrise Movement when it first started, I understand why young people are angry at the mess that we've left, but I felt like there was no place for older people anywhere in the Sunrise Movement. And I've been looking for ways that I can lend whatever I can to dynamic younger groups. And so it felt like a homecoming when I came to your meeting this last, well, it hasn't even been a week, it's been a couple days. Yeah. So thank you. And I'm just delighted to see the energy and what's going on here. Now, can you talk a little bit about projects that you're working on right now? Who would like to take that?
Me?
Yeah, okay, go for it.
Yeah, so our principal campaign right now is the fight against the Bridge Industrial Mega Warehouse. Surprisingly, a lot of people who live in Tacoma who will be affected by this project still haven't heard about it. It is a 2.5 million square foot project that's over a mile long, to put that into perspective. It's close to 45 football fields of trees and green space that they are ripping out and paving over. And so we are deeply opposed to this project, not because, again, we oppose jobs or oppose industry. We like those things when they are done, like, healthily and in harmony with nature. But this project doesn't do that. This project is part of a process called containerization, where they build highly automated warehouses inland, away from the port, away from the good union jobs, and create, you know, low-wage, low-density jobs to try to undercut the unions, because, you know, we have a strong Teamster union here. My partner is a Teamster. Actually, Aoife's partner is a Teamster too.
Oh yeah. Heck yeah.
So, and then the big, you know, other big environmental impacts, which Aoife can talk more about, is the impact it would have on our aquifer and the air pollution, all that stuff. And that ties into one of the other things that we've been working on, which is the city angle, like what the city allows and what they don't allow. Right now in the city charter, nowhere in the charter do they mention climate. And we just updated the charter review, like, concurrently. It's happening, like, right now. And that sucks. The rules of the city don't mention climate. That sucks. And so.
And there was a real effort. And,
yes.
I know we'll get into that. I'm not going to get into that. Yeah.
Yeah, so we're also pushing from the city side as well. So we're fighting against this project, and then also so that the city, or also fighting so that the city would be required to not approve projects like this in the future. There's a lot more to say, but you can read about it on our website.
Aoife, will you talk a little bit about not just the climate, but the aquifer?
Yeah, absolutely. In all of Tacoma, we have one aquifer, the South Tacoma Aquifer, and this aquifer is actually able to produce up to 40% of the city of Tacoma's drinking water. And I think that's really important because, we can see the mountain from here, and every year I see it becoming more and more brown, and the glaciers are receding, and currently, most of the water, if you're like me and have spent your whole life in Tacoma, then pretty much all the water you've ever drank, unless bottled water, it comes from the mountain, from glaciers. And most of our water comes through the Green River, and every year it's having record low levels of water. It's very, scary to me thinking.
There's a shocking lack of snowpack somewhere near this year.
Yeah, definitely.
It's
and
terrifying.
Each winter, there's a lower and lower snowpack. And so I think, especially this year, Washington State declared a drought emergency, except I think the city of Tacoma and a little bit of South King County. And that is in large part due to the aquifer we have that we get our drinking water from. And the Bridge Industrial Mega Warehouse threatens this aquifer because they want to, well, right now the warehouse site is a seasonal channel, wetlands, and, you know, every winter it fills up with water. There's pictures of people like up to their chin in water in the wetland, and they have, in the pre-construction process, they've started to compact the soil, and there hasn't been any research done on how this compaction of the aquifer is going to affect our drinking water. And, you know, aquifers are really important because it's somewhere rainwater can seep into the ground and become, purified. And we have like 4 or 5 wells that get drinking water from this aquifer. And I think that's highly significant. It will have a really big impact on our community if this space is paved over, because, you know, pavement is an impermeable surface, so rainwater can't seep into the aquifer and basically recharge our drinking water.
Now, you just taught me something. I thought I knew all about this. I knew that the aquifer used to be the main source of drinking water for the city of Tacoma, but I thought it wasn't used anymore. So it still is used. Mm-hmm. And, if Mount Rainier sheds its snow and we aren't able to get our water from the Green River and a storage facility up there, and this is our only other aquifer, and we pave it over and pollute it.
Right.
We're in deep trouble.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, you mentioned that right now, that in the wintertime, that aquifer fills up with water, and that it's fairly deep.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. And I wonder where that water's going to go if they pave it. Is it going to flood areas?
Isaac can speak more to that.
There is actually already a project called FRED 310 that is built by Sierra Construction, like, you know, this mega warehouse is, for Bridge Industrial. It is almost a one-to-one, considering project scope. However, the scale of...
I would explain that. What is one-to-one?
Oh, it's also one of these containment warehouses that they're building for the same company, using the same company, construction company, Sierra Construction. So this project is done by the same people. It's actually a smaller warehouse that they're putting inside of South Tacoma. But considering the effects that is happening right now, currently, to FRED 310.
And where is that?
That is it's in Frederick, Washington, but it also sort of dips into Berkeley.
Okay.
So what you'll see
is Berkeley, Washington, not California.
Yeah. Dude, if we could reach the flooding all the way to Berkeley, California, I would not be surprised.
Well, we do sell water to California.
Yeah, after they sold all theirs.
Yeah.
But what we see is this project is almost just a smaller scale of what is currently happening in Fredrickson. And what Fredrickson is experiencing is that they have a new river that forms in people's backyards. This is a new river that, because there is so much rain and there is impenetrable concrete that they have paved over 309 acres, where they ripped out all of that natural land and trees and replaced it with this concrete. To the point where there is no place for this water to go except into people's backyards, into the streets, into also the streets in front of other businesses. And neither Fredrickson, the city, nor Bridge Industrial or Sierra Construction has addressed any of it. So all of this sits here, present from 2017, before construction, when there was enough flooding to sink a car if you parked in the wrong area, to now full-blown new river, baby. New
and
birth.
The Department of Ecology hasn't done anything?
Oh, they have. They have designated it mitigated non-significance.
Oh, sounds familiar.
I know, right? I've heard that somewhere. Yeah. Almost like this is exactly what the city has said in Tacoma. So if we already have flooding that is present with no one addressing it, no one coming in to fix it, and now that flooding that will happen for certain in South Tacoma is also going to be filled with toxic Superfund chemicals. Mm-hmm. So when we see...
Now, where are the toxic polluted chemicals coming from? Why is there such a toxic mess there?
Well, there's multiple oil refinements that happened on this 2.5 million square footage that now has almost like storage containers of this chemicals of leftovers from the oil refinement just in the ground. So they just covered that up. And then we had the Arsarco plume. I don't think they even covered that up.
No, they were considered outside of the area where it was significant. Mm-hmm. So, I was part of that lawsuit. Mm-hmm.
So we have also on our equity index that, you know, all of this Superfund site, like all of these massive chemical dumping happened majority in South Tacoma, East Tacoma, port industrialized neighborhoods. And they did all of that construction work specifically in the 1940s redlined racist districting that they did so that only minorities, only low income would be affected by any of this chemical catastrophe. So they planned this all the way in the 40s. Now we see the repercussions of it in the fact that they upended an entire South Tacoma neighborhood. They separated like families, upended people so that they could put in the I-5 freeway, which separates South Tacoma and South End. And now they have decided that this neighborhood that they cut in half, they can do whatever they wish with. Mm-hmm. So
I
that
think they
all
call
of our
that sacrifice zones.
Yes, right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So we have sacrifice zones of South Tacoma, South End, East Tacoma. These are all like all of Ruston Point, North Tacoma. They went in very thoroughly and took out all of this Arsarco plume that was left. Once it hit those red line districts, all hands were off. They had one or two sites that they actually went in and measured, and that constituted for like 2.5 mile radius compared to the. Okay, Bob has some lead in his backyard, and then down the street, Dylan doesn't. So if you can see that much care put into the city, we know for a fact the city is capable of serving its people and chooses not to.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, there was a lot of greenwashing in the North End and in Ruston, too. And one of the things they did is they built part of the seawall, the rocks, along the waterway from slag.
Shame. Shameful.
And then they covered it, the worst of the toxic material, with a 1-inch layer of concrete. And that was supposed to contain it when we have rain and it washes through and washes it all into the Puget Sound.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we've had, you know, if it touches the ground, it hits the sound for a long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And still, we have up on the charter if we're going to keep clean water or not.
So that's the current project. Mm-hmm. And how can the listener get involved if they want to?
Yeah, join CAST. Come and join us. We meet every week for a community meal. A lot of people still don't know about this project who live, like, quite literally next door. Because, like Isaac said, it's built in the middle of a neighborhood. And come with us canvassing every Sunday. We go canvassing every Sunday from 5 to 7 to knock on people's doors and let them know about this and how they can get involved.
Can you give your website?
Yes. Our website is climatealliancesouthsound.org. We're also on Instagram as at Climate Alliance South Sound and in Facebook as well, same Climate Alliance South Sound. You can also, our email and numbers on the website. You can message us directly on Instagram. And we are always looking for more avenues of fight. So we have, you know, we are fighting with the city about changing the way that these programs are handled. You know, with Bridge Industrial, we're fighting with them. And there's also other legal action that we could possibly take. And so we're exploring that avenue as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, now we talked about your current project. Can you talk about maybe, have you done any previous projects as CAS?
So we haven't done any, we've only been around for a year.
Okay.
When we started, we were looking for a campaign, and this is the first campaign that we picked up. But we do have one other thing that we are organizing around right now, which is we are protesting both the Republican National Convention, which already happened, because Republicans are terrible for the environment. The, you know, last time Trump was in power, he gutted the EPA and destroyed the NEPA. So we went to that and protested. And we're also going to protest the DNC, because the Democrats are in power right now, and they are the ones who have approved billions of dollars of our tax-paying money to bomb Gaza and occupied Palestine indiscriminately. And that is violent destruction of the earth, which we wholeheartedly opposed. And so we're going to the DNC to protest on August 19th and 22nd. Both me and Aoife will be there. And that costs money, so we're doing a fundraiser. And our fundraiser is August 11th at South Park, which is the park that is closest to the Brood Industrial Mega Warehouse site. And it's going to be led by our good friend and cast member, Jamie, who is a yoga expert. We're doing a We're doing a yoga in the park. So sliding scale, come through, even if you can't pay.
What time will you be doing that?
11 o'clock. 11 o'clock on August 11th at South Park.
Sounds like we're at the 11th hour, huh?
Yeah, I'll say.
Yeah.
It is a climate catastrophe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you'd like to tell the listener?
I'd like to say that, well, a lot of people ask us, like, of all the things in Tacoma, why this mega warehouse? Why is this something you want to focus on? And to me, the construction of this warehouse is, it shows so many things that are wrong with how the city operates. And, you know, it goes all the way back to the 1930s, where Tacoma had a strong practice of redlining, which is where, you know, they accept or deny home loans and other things like that based on your skin color. And this is a form of, you know, creating segregation within the city. And of course, the parts of the city like South Tacoma that have the highest percentage of oppressed nationalities, which is true to this day, you know, that's on purpose. They concentrate communities of color into these sacrifice zones. And these, you know, this is an economic sacrifice, environmental sacrifice. And so I believe that this project constitutes environmental racism, which is, you know, a huge problem in our city in general. But this project is really emblematic of that. And, you know, this, where the warehouse site is, on three sides of it, is residentially zoned. So that's all neighborhoods and where families live and near schools and things like that. And a project like this can affect like the value of your home, like especially with flooding, that's gonna affect your insurance rates. It's gonna bring a lot more air pollution from all the trucks coming in.
Traffic pollution.
Yeah, traffic, a lot of traffic.
Getting around in South Tacoma is gonna be a nightmare.
Right, yeah. And South Tacoma already has the highest rates of asthma. And so inviting all of these semi-trucks to come through, and they're going to be idling at every single red light. And
do you have any idea of how many trucks they will have or how many trips?
They've estimated like several thousand trucks, like semi-truck trips through coming through South Tacoma every single day.
What?
So
12,000, yeah.
Yeah, wow. they've estimated so Brood Industrial has kind of flip-flopped a lot on how many trucks that they expect to bring, but we're estimating about 10 to 12,000 trucks every single day, and this is a 24-hour facility, so that's, you know, loud, busy traffic through South Tacoma, like on South Tacoma Way, through the business district every single day, 24/7.
If I had a child that was elementary school age,
right,
that would mean that my child is no longer going to be able to walk two or three blocks to school.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Or ride their bike.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems incredibly dangerous. We're also concerned about, you know, that much traffic means, like, our emergency service is going to be able to get through when they need to.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just, you know, and the impact on our local businesses on South Tacoma Way.
Oh, finding a parking space in front of a restaurant.
Exactly. Right, exactly. And so it's just, it's going to, like, there's a huge cost to this development, and Bridge Industrial is not going to pay it. The people of South Tacoma are going to pay for it with their lives through, like, the destruction of infrastructure. Our streets are not ready for 10,000 semi-trucks every day. And taxpayers are going to have to repair those streets, you know?
And our city council decided not to take the suggestions of the Charter Review Committee that worked so hard and are not even adding a part of their ordinances that address climate.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
The city has had all of the power the entire time. The city will tell you, we couldn't do anything.
Our hands
There's
are
nothing
tied.
We can do.
Yeah.
They sold them the property.
Yep.
Exactly.
This is their land. This is all the city's. This was public property, and now it's been sold to a private company that will drive trucks past schools, through neighborhoods, that will not care for the community that they are driving into at, you know, whatever speed they need to get the job done.
Listener, are you getting mad? I hope so. Because if you get mad, that comes with a rush of energy. What do you do with that energy? You get active.
That's right.
So once again, this is the Climate Alliance of the South Sound. This is a group that's primarily younger, energetic people, if you've got lots of energy, but they're welcoming to us older farts.
Hey, be nice to yourself.
I'm 31. I'm 31 years old. And I want to add really quick. I misspoke at the beginning. I said 2.5 million acres. That's wrong. It's 2.5 million square feet for the project. It's like 250 acres. So that was flipped.
Okay.
And it's up to 12,000 more trucks and other vehicle trips. So it's not just semi trucks that they're projecting.
Thank you for the correction. Well, I've really enjoyed having you here today. Thank you so much for coming. You haven't seen the last of me.
That's right. That's right.
And I know I haven't seen the last of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much,
Thank
Marilyn.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah,
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. Thank you, everyone.
Okay. Are we off the air yet?
No.
This is the part last where we chat casually.
There is hope. There is hope. It is so easy to get drawn into the despair and climate despair. There is hope. We are fighting and we're going to win.